businesses, thankfully today, have no choice but to think long and hard about impact and cleaning up their act. From major corporations shifting practice to startups setting out their grand vision, sustainability is what investors, consumers, and employees are demanding from companies. And from recycled plastics in swimsuits and plants and t-shirts to electric vehicles, keep cups, compostable coffee pods, and luxury handbags made from old fire hose, sustainable and responsible practice has been a fixture of this program. But there is one sector I've been wanting to dig into for a while now, which has a massive impact on our planet. And that is food and drink, and the incredible amount of perfectly good sustenance that goes to waste from restaurants, hotels, supermarkets, and from our homes, of course, as well. It's said that more than a third of food produced around the world is wasted, something that is both costly and damaging for our planet. And so for this special episode, I was very lucky to sit down with two inspiring entrepreneurs who are leading figures in the world of curbing food waste. You're listening to The Entrepreneurs with me, Daniel Bage. For today's program, we'll hear from Elsa Bernadotte, co-founder and COO of Karma, and Mette Lugge, CEO of Too Good To Go, two platforms helping consumers and businesses radically reduce food waste. First up, Mette, who started her career at McKinsey, but left with the dream of building something herself. From a family of entrepreneurs herself, Mette was also a competitive horse jumper and would go on to co-found the fitness community called Endomondo, a company which had more than 20 million users when it was sold to Under Armour in 2015 for $85 million. Mette was thinking about her next career move when a chance encounter on a public bus introduced her to Too Good To Go, a startup launched in 2016. Today, she's the company CEO, leading the Copenhagen-based Certified B Company, which has to date helped to save more than 28 million meals in 14 countries, with a staff now of over 400. Here's Mette now with her story.
We sold Endomondo to Under Armour 5 years ago now, I guess. And I stayed on for a few years after that. And then again, I was starting to feel like I was missing this feeling of building something from the ground up. And then by coincidence, I was on a bus out of Copenhagen and I got to sit next to a woman on the bus. And she showed me the Too Good To Go app on her phone. And I just thought it was the coolest thing I ever saw. And she talked to me about it. She introduced me to the founders and I started studying food waste. At that time, I had honestly never thought about food waste as a climate issue. And few people did think of it that way. But I thought it was such a genius concept. It's very rare that you see something where you can help address one of the biggest issues we have in a way that leaves everyone as winners. Everyone's just happier. So I just thought that was genius. So I asked the guys if I could be involved. And at that time, they were looking for the first round of funding. So I became one of the first two investors and started sparring with them. And then a few months later, they asked if by any chance I could take it on full time because they didn't want to be part of the management themselves.
So was this some quite creative people that had created a good platform, but that needed someone to drive it a little bit? What was the scale of it when you got interested, when you saw it on a bus?
It was fairly small. It was way less than a million users. I think we were saving maybe 2,000 meals a day, something like that. Now we had 100,000 meals a day. So it was really early days, but I thought, you know, the app had only been out for 9 months. But I was quite impressed with the traction and the retention of the stores on the platform after such a short period of time.
There are a number of apps focused now on helping with the problem of food waste around the world and in different markets. But can you set up for us specifically what you do with Too Good To Go? How does that app work?
Yeah, so Too Good To Go is a marketplace for surplus food. So we help restaurants, bakeries, supermarkets sell the food they would otherwise throw away by the end of business. And the way it works on the consumer side is just that you download the free app and then you can see on the app what surplus food is expected to be nearby you and when you can pick it up. You buy it directly in the app and then you go and pick it up yourself.
So this could be a full meal or some ingredients to make a meal, or how does that work?
Yeah, it can be anything. So it can be in a supermarket, it will typically be a fruit and vegetable bag or a bakery bag. If you go to a restaurant, it's a ready-to-eat meal typically. So it will depend a little bit on what kind of store we're talking about. But you can read about it on the app and you'll get a good impression of what to expect.
I have to admit, I haven't tried this yet, but my idea is that you would have some people thinking, okay, I can get a deal, so I'm going to wait until the end of the day to buy lunch or to buy dinner, and then that might concern some businesses. Is that part of it?
Yeah, it's always a concern for the businesses until they start working with us, because in real life, it's not an issue. We operate with this magic bag concept because food waste is unpredictable. The stores don't know what's going to be left by end of business. So we can't tell the user exactly what's going to be in the bag. And that also means from a consumer perspective that it's very hard to plan for something you don't know what is. Mm. And that's why we don't really have the cannibalization.
Did the app start out in supermarkets? That seems like a huge sector in the problem of food waste, is just the scale of supermarkets and how much food they can bring in. They don't know how much to order. They don't know how much is going to be sold. But you focus on restaurants as well. Where do you think the biggest problem lies right now?
So I think overall the biggest problem in solving food waste is really the mindset. It's that we've lost the respect for food collectively across the value chain. If we look at where exactly in the value chain most food waste is happening, it's in the households. It's consumers paying for food and then throwing it away after. That's really the biggest thing to crack. And what we're trying to do is that we're trying to address the retail part of the value chain and their food waste. But we want to do it in a way where we inspire the consumers to change habits at home. Mm. Because if you save a meal with us and you go and you pick it up, you want to make sure you make the most out of that meal. And hopefully we also inspire you to have another look at your fridge and make sure you really use all of it up and get creative with it.
Yeah, because my idea is if you're encouraging people to buy more, it doesn't really help. But I guess if they're consciously thinking about this is something that would be thrown out, they're also going to think about what do I already have? What do I need? Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. And also we see that they start asking each other for inspiration. So what can I do with all this broccoli that I just got? Mm. You know, what the hell do I do with this much of it? And then they start exchanging recipes and then you see the creativity going, or they start sharing with their neighbors and whoever lives next door. And that's where I think we can bring in that respect for the food again. And that's really powerful.
Well, that's really interesting. A lot of focus is today on how food is grown and the impact that way. A lot of people talking about plant-based diets and what it actually takes to grow and raise food. But on the other side of that, I mean, just as big or maybe even bigger is that we just throw the food out that's already been made for us and could go to someone else. How much has this changed, do you think, in the time that you've been with the company and in our collective mindset on how we treat food, I guess?
I think we're starting to have more awareness around the issue now, but we really need that to also become action. And that's the next step. So we want to not just inspire people, but also empower them. And one way we empower, of course, is with the app, because it's a very concrete thing you can do is save a meal. But we also want to help inspire you and show you how you can plan your shopping better. You know, all these little tips and tricks for how to use up what's in your fridge. And every Sunday you bring everything out and you just go bananas and be creative. And all these things, that's what we want to do next, is really try and help consumers more. But then at the same time, when we look at the value chain, you also have 40% of the food waste happening before the retail level. So we also want to annoy the producers a little bit and help them put this on the agenda.
Well, that's absolutely fascinating. Talk to us a little bit about that, because obviously you have a platform that you can present to businesses and they can buy in quite easily, and individuals as well. But talk to us about on the production side.
So on the production side, we've started to work with quite a few of the big producers now, and their setup is actually exactly the same. They have all this surplus food from the factories and we have consumers who can come pick it up at a discount. So it works exactly the same. The challenge we often have is that these factories don't necessarily want people on the factory floor. So they need to have some sort of reception or some place where you can have a pickup point. But when they have that, they're more than willing to work with us and to try and save the food, even though it's a little bit unorthodox.
Well, in a sense, it's upending the supply chain of the regular market of how you would go to buy food. But a lot of people, especially restaurants, there's been this trend in farm to table and eating things that are close to you. So I guess that's the next step in helping to solve this problem, is maybe sourcing where food is close to you. Is that something you think about?
Yeah, that helps too. But when we look at the whole carbon impact of the value chain in food, the travel itself is actually not that big a part of it. It really is the production and then the waste. Packaging is small as well. So it really is the waste in itself. So we try and work with that wherever the food is produced. Mm. We really try and work with that.
You talked about how businesses are quite interested in this. Can you talk to us about some of the partners? And the interesting thing, I guess, you point out is there's been this trend for supermarkets recently on plastic bags and packaging. But a bigger problem maybe you're setting out here is that they're actually throwing out a ton of food, which is an even bigger problem, the next level. So how do you engage with, say, a big supermarket chain?
So all supermarkets will throw away food every day. You know, even though they try and mark down and they do what they can, they will end up throwing away food. So what we do is that we talk to them and we try and understand the way they work and the way they operate and what kind of mechanisms they have in place today. And I think best practice is when these supermarkets have like a hierarchy of solutions to address food waste. And then we try and figure out where do we belong in that hierarchy and how do we get it set up in a way where we can really get to zero food waste. Mm. I think if a supermarket chain works with us correctly, they can get to zero food waste because we have the demand now on the platform. We have more than 20 million users and our users are willing to save, I would say, almost everything.
Another part about food waste and the things that we throw out is labeling, of course, and the expiry dates that people become obsessed with. And obviously, mandated by law, those have to be on there and you have to put specific dates, even if food is going to be good. So supermarkets throw out things days ahead of time. People are throwing things out in the home. Is this a big part of your focus and how we can sort of change the mindset about food labeling?
Yes, it is. And we really, in general, we try, in addition to our direct impact that we have on our marketplace, we try to take on these indirect initiatives to drive even more impact. And date labeling is definitely one of them. So it's actually 20% of all food waste in the households that is driven by confusion over date labeling. So most consumers don't know the difference between use by and best before. And as a consequence, they will just throw out the food just to be sure if it's past the date. And really, best before is just a guiding date. So you don't have to throw away the food. You have to use your senses. So you look at it, you smell it, and you taste it. And then you use your common sense to decide if you want to eat it or not. And whereas use by date is one to take seriously. And then you actually have to throw away the food on that date. But best before, it's really more a guiding principle than anything else. And we have taken initiatives in 4 countries now to gather all the biggest producers and create these coalitions. Where we have, for example, we've had Unilever, Danone, Carlsberg, Arla, really big producers come together and say, yeah, we're gonna actually improve the date labeling on some of our products, the products where it makes sense. And then we've done massive PR stunts to try and get the word out, because most important, of course, is that the consumers hear about this and understand it.
And people are also willing to go out of their way a little bit, not only to make savings, not only to save money in their pocket, but to make an impact. Do you notice that as well?
Definitely. And we're surprised sometimes that someone is willing to bike across town to pick up a meal. But I think a lot of people really have the motivation, and we try and make it fun with the magic bag because there's a bit of a treasure hunt to it as well. And that's when it becomes a sport and people really go all in. And we think that's great to see.
It sounds like it's harking back to your days as a competitive athlete,
yes.
Perhaps. You mentioned, I think, 20 million users, 100,000 or 100,000 meals saved a day. Is that the
yes.
scale of it? And
yes.
13 markets? What's the scale of this today?
So we are in 13 markets now. We have Sweden coming up. And then up next will be the US, which, of course, is a big bet for us and something we're excited about. So we are just now setting up shop in New York, mainly. And then we're going to attack US city by city. Hmm. That will be interesting. We work with almost 40,000 different stores now across these countries. So it's starting to have a certain scale. The team is about 520 people now.
And started out from just a couple of people when you
yes,
approached them and yes. said, hey, can I help?
Yeah.
So you've obviously helped quite a bit. I'm just curious if we can come back to you personally a little bit, Mette, just to hear about how this has been for you. You talked about wanting to do something with a bit of purpose and to get involved. You obviously had no idea that you would be working in the sector of food waste. But how's this been for you in the last couple of years, growing this from a couple of people to over 500?
It's been quite amazing. I think even though when you are an entrepreneur, you you know, you're not afraid of setting targets and dreaming big, but it's still something different when it then, you know, when most of it then actually happens. It's not something I reflect on a lot, honestly, because there's always the next goal and the target around the corner. But when we hit a big milestone, like we just passed 100,000 meals a day, then we take time out with the team to just look back and reflect a little bit. And then, you know, I am pinching my arm a little bit because I think we are starting to have impact at scale. And it's actually fun as well. And I think hopefully we can also show that over time, it can be a decent business to do good.
You talked about being pleasantly surprised that someone might be willing to bike across town to pick up a meal. But you also talk about, you know, thinking about those numbers and the scale and what's the next big target. How do you personally, as the CEO, remain engaged in how this is impacting people's day-to-day lives? Do you see people talking about this app on an airplane or a bus and get involved and tell them about it?
I mean, when I meet people just out and about, a lot of them will have some story to share with me. I also save food myself. Also, when I'm traveling, it's always fun to see in the different cities what kind of food you get. It's always different. You never know what you're going to get. I stay close like that. My kids as well love saving food, seeing if there's cake in it today.
Mette Lugge, CEO of Too Good To Go. And you can read more about Mette and her journey in the first edition of the Entrepreneurs Magazine in print, published last year. You can find it at our cafes and shops and at monocle.com. Next up, we meet Elsa Bernadotte, the co-founder and COO of Karma, a company she founded with three complete strangers back in 2016. Based in Stockholm, Karma works with over 1,500 businesses, from supermarket chains to restaurants, hotels, bakeries, and cafes, and to date has helped to save more than 750 tons of food. Elsa is a serial entrepreneur herself who previously co-founded a healthy ice cream alternative company called Pop Fruits, and is today helping to push Karma into new markets. Here now is Elsa.
My first venture was called Pop Fruits, so it stood for popsicle fruits. It was actually not an ice cream, it was a healthy substitute to an ice cream, but obviously it was packaged like an ice cream, and it was basically frozen fruit on a stick, 100% fruit, so gluten-free, lactose-free, natural sugar. Imagine a mango put on a wooden stick that you could actually buy on the go and, you know, eat between meetings, which is quite rare usually for a mango lover to do. And that was an amazing journey. I founded that 1 year after graduating from university, and we set up production in south of Vietnam, and, you know, we sourced the fruit ourselves, set up the production with a facility over there, and then brought the fruit here to Europe, started off in Sweden, expanded to Holland and then to Spain, and then ended up 3 years later to selling the company.
So you go on to get into the business of food waste, which I imagine is something you did understand when you were working in the production of an actual product beforehand. But I believe Karma was founded with a group of strangers. Is that right?
Yes.
So how did you come to meet your co-founders, and what was the sort of the conversation about what you guys wanted to build?
Mm, it's a really good question, because we literally had known each other 5 days when we shook hands and said, let's do this. Or rather, I had known them. We're four co-founders. They had had their own business before together, so they knew each other. So I guess I was the odd bird in the team. But we instantly started talking about not so much what we wanted to build in terms of the product, but more of what was the vision or the values behind it. What are your values as a person, as an entrepreneur? What is important to you? How do you want to use your entrepreneurial skills and your technical skills? And we gathered very much along the vision that we wanted to use tech to have a positive impact on a massive scale. And since we all of us have had our own businesses beforehand, I think we could sort of accelerate the conversations into going to quite a deep level directly, because we've had done a lot of mistakes beforehand. And so we knew what was important for us in a co-founder, and asked those questions quite abruptly to each other. And also, like, this is what's important to me, and this is what is non-negotiable to me. So I would say that both, like, the shared vision of what we wanted to do with the skills and the backgrounds that we had, but also what was important for us as people and entrepreneurs.
You know, in the way that we shop and use our phones all the time. It seems to make sense. We get food delivered, we buy things online, it comes to us. But in this sort of looking for a deal, I'm wondering how that starting out became an end game for you to solve food waste. Because in a sense, it sounds to me like you're encouraging people to buy more at a discounted rate and they might then buy more than they need. Is that something you think about?
The way that I view it is that if people use Karma, instead of buying something for full price items and having that seller overproducing, they can buy it from Karma instead. So what we've seen in the platform is that people, you know, they follow their favorite places, places that they usually have lunch, as an example, and then they realize, oh, they have this meal for half off in the afternoon. I can buy it and have for dinner as well. So I'm still to be proven that it would lead to people eating more. I think it's rather people making more of an active and sustainable choice when they make the choice of what they're going to consume.
Just to backtrack a little bit, you said you started to hear from businesses actually that this is a problem that they had. Did you then realize the scale of this problem?
Well, that was very much in the same time we were looking into the problem, because it sounds, I feel a little bit ridiculous now to say, like, I wasn't aware of how big the problem was. But for us, back in 2015 or 2016, this was not as hot topic. The problem was definitely there. I think the industry have known, and that became obvious when we talked to the sellers. But it was not a common topic to debate, and the society in general weren't as engaged. So when we started looking into it and we realized how big of an issue it was, we were actually surprised and astonished, like, how come this is so big and no one is really talking about it at a larger scale? And how come we haven't solved it? Because to us, it was sort of like a no-brainer. It's all of this amazing, still edible food, high-quality food available, and there's obviously demand for it, so why not just match it? And when we talk to restaurants, their approach to it, I'm generalizing now, but for those we talked to, they said it's always going to be impossible to perfectly predict how demand is going to be on a daily basis. So for us, having food waste is just something you need to accept. And I love that notion, because that's an opportunity for me.
That seems like a massive opportunity. And bring us up to today a little bit, because the scale of the platform is much bigger than when you started. You're in a number of countries, and I imagine you have figures on just how much food you may have saved. So can you give us a sense of what the scale is now?
From Karma? Yeah, we rescued over 900 tons of food from being wasted. So that's approximately an equivalence of 1,300 tons of CO2 saved.
That's quite a bit. When we talk today about needing to make changes in the way that we act in the world to have an impact on the climate, this is a huge topic from big business to individuals. Do you think we understand yet the scale of the impact of food waste in this whole section? Because the production of food is insane as a CO2 emitter, for example.
I don't. I don't even think I do. And I'm working with it 24/7. I mean, when you talk about all of these big numbers, we're wasting 1.3 billion tons of food globally every year, which is like an economic value over $1 trillion wasted. How do you grasp that number? And how do you also take all of the other factors into consideration? It's not only about the food. It's about the loss of the resources that's been put into producing that food, transporting that food, packaging that food, the water resources that has been needed to produce this food. It's the land. And I think that's why we just need to continue to talk about it. But I also think that it's also fine to some extent, because I think you can become a little bit overwhelmed by the level of the seriousness, but also like the size of the problem. So we really try to make it easy for people to feel like, okay, it's massive, that's great, but how can I help? And that's how we're going to solve it. No one will be able to, you know, take a massive chunk of it all at once. We will all have to contribute in one way or another. And it can be as easy as just like make an active choice when you're buying one meal. That's enough. Like, one small step can have a massive impact if we all do it. So maybe it's fine that we don't really understand it, but we do need to talk about it.
In that sense, you've launched a really interesting section of the app, I guess, which is the community. And I found that quite interesting in the way that you've, I mean, you started talking about how you began with crowdsourcing, but now this is a way that you have ambassadors and you have people doing a bit of the work for you, but they're getting other people and other businesses excited about how they can get involved as well. When did you tap into how powerful that could be, this community angle?
Again, we actually like sort of stumbled upon this opportunity. I mean, today we're in 3 countries and over 200 cities. But when we started off, we were in Stockholm and a district of Stockholm. But obviously we can't, you know, prohibit people from downloading the app in another city. And then the user experience is quite terrible because you download an app which is empty. There's no food there, which is very frustrating from a user point of view. So we said, okay, how can we make the experience still okay? So we said, okay, what if you're not in Stockholm and you download the app, we would add like a button where it said like, we're not here yet, but we're trying to expand as fast as possible, which we still do. If you want to help us grow faster, could you send us like a tip? Is there a cafe nearby or a restaurant or a grocery store where you think that Karma could be applicable? Let us know. And we got, you know, in the first 2 weeks, I think we got 10,000 people. And we were at the time, that was like a big amount in comparison to the user base, and people sending like really qualitative tips like, oh, I know Paul, he's having this cafe, or I know Lisa, she's running this business, you should reach out, say hi from Patrick. And that was amazing. So they literally generated leads for us, and our business is very much, you know, driven and based on credibility. So having a user sort of endorsing us that way was really important, reaching out to these places, and it did help us expand. So now I think we're in, again, like over 200 cities in Sweden. We would never have been able to expand that fast and across the whole country without the ambassadors. So again, I think we stumbled upon that opportunity, and that became a big thing for us.
Talk to me about how you're addressing what we can do to change our behavior at home, because I understand one of the biggest factors, or if not the biggest part of this, is the amount of food that we actually throw out. We buy it and throw it away in our homes. How do you talk to people about how they can have an impact there?
I think it starts with just awareness. Just start being aware of the food that you're wasting. Look into your fridge, like how much of this food will you consume and how much will you not? So for us, it's a lot about just educating the market of the issue at hand and that it matters, and also, you know, making people aware that it is the small actions that matter. So sometimes people tell me like, well, I only throw away 1 carrot a week or 1 carrot a day. I don't know, silly example. But if you sort of accumulate it, that actually becomes a significant amount. And the same goes for a restaurant who says like, well, we only have like 1 dish left over every day. But, you know, that's massive over time. And then just like offering people small tricks and tips of what you can do. Hmm. It's going to take time to change, not only educate the market, but also change the attitude and the behaviors. And I think it's so important to make it a positive to change. It needs to be easy to make a change, frictionless, rewarding and fun. So that's why we are so keen on talking about this issue, you know, addressing the seriousness and the size of the issue, but really emphasizing that it's a win-win for everybody to be part of the solution rather than being ashamed of being part of the problem.
Very well said. And on the point of sort of being part of the solution, you've actually teamed up with an appliance manufacturer to create your own fridge. Is that right? Tell us about that.
We have. So we've partnered with Electrolux, where we've together developed a smart fridge, the Karma fridge, that we've actually started placing out at retailers, so grocery stores, but also at public places. So we have a couple of malls in Sweden, for example, and a few companies who actually have this Karma fridge in their location. It's an extension of what we're already doing. It's basically a way to make it even more easy for people and businesses who have food surplus to place it somewhere and offer it for consumers who can buy it for half off. Mm. And I'm very proud to announce that we've just initiated a partnership with Whole Foods here in UK. So we're getting our first fridge there this week in London.
Good to hear. That's fantastic. In a workplace, then, is that kind of the opposite of the little note you leave on like on your lunch, like, don't steal my food? This would be the fridge where it'd be
please
like,
steal it.
Take this, you can have it.
Yeah, I was a little bit vague there. So what we do with the fridges at the offices is that we work together with wholesalers and producers who also have surplus food. Who would have thought? And they can deliver their surplus food to these fridges, to these office places and to these malls. And then consumers can buy that food. So it's actually a new way of connecting, you know, wholesalers to consumers, which hasn't really been done in the same way before. So the way it works is that you as you do with all of the other food, you simply find the food in the Karma app. You see like pictures of all of the meals available. You buy it directly in the phone. You get a digital receipt. And then you go to the fridge and unlock it with a QR code or Bluetooth. And you can pick out your food from there.
Fantastic. Just lastly, I'd love to hear about what else you and your co-founders are working on today. Obviously, continuing to expand, continuing to raise awareness. But what do you have on your plate today, let's say?
So something that really, really excites me is that when we started off, it was all about reduction. Like, how can we save the food that is already at the risk of being thrown away? But if we're really going to solve this issue, it's really not about reduction in our point of view. It's more about actually predicting in order to prevent. So, you know, our dream scenario is that, you know, Karma will not really be needed because food waste won't even occur. But in order to reach that stage, we need to understand, how does the food waste happen today? What is actually being wasted or is being at the risk of being thrown away? And how can we educate and inform the sellers to become more optimized? So that is something we're focusing a lot on right now. Like, how can we become better at actually predicting on a daily basis how it's going to look for each seller and help them prevent it from even happening? And I'm very excited about that.
Elsa Bernadotte, co-founder and COO of Karma. My thanks to Elsa and Meta for coming in to share their stories. And be sure to tune in to Eureka on Friday when we meet the head of Gale's Bakery here in the UK to hear about the company's own measures to reduce food waste through some of its own initiatives across its more than 50 locations. Until then, my thanks to Christy Evans, who mixed and edited this show. I'm Daniel Bache. Thank you so much for listening, and goodbye.